I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana. Today's show, well, it's a hard but necessary look inside one of Montana's largest hospitals where, like all across Montana, wins are hard to come by. We've seen a surge in our state. In fact, Montana has recorded the highest percentage increase in the country in new cases over the past week. And hospitals are approaching the necessity of implementing crisis care. What does that mean for us as potential patients or for our frontline workers? Nick Eli, a freelance reporter, wrote this story for Kaiser Health News. And as I said, it is a necessary but hard look at Montana's current healthcare status regarding COVID-19. Nick Eli is with us now, a freelance reporter, as we welcome you back from Montana for Montana. It's Voices of Montana, former editor of the Bozeman Chronicle, also an adjunct professor at Montana State University, authored this news story that many outlets are running now. It's from Kaiser Health News, and that's a national newsroom, in-depth journalism about health issues. They offer those stories to major or to publications, and Nick wrote this story. Nick, thank you for being here. I appreciate that. I mentioned it a couple of times here. Wins are hard to come by. That's one of the quotes in your story here. But I don't know how else to start this out. Today, Taylor Brown, our president, read just that first couple of paragraphs from the story, and it talks about a gentleman in his early mid-20s, and his last days spent because of COVID-19 in a hospital. Let's talk about, first of all, your overview as you put this story together. Many different facets to this, isn't there?
Yeah. Thank you, Tom. I appreciate you having me on this morning. Yeah, it's definitely multifaceted, and I appreciate that Taylor read that the beginning of that. I think it's certainly telling of what's happening in Billings Clinic. I saw this when Governor Gene Forte had ordered the National Guard into Billings Clinic. I just thought that it was worthwhile to say, okay, what's that look like? What's happening in these hospitals that people can, I can go see and hopefully report to people in a way that they can, understand, okay, this is something that's happening in Montana, in our hospitals, in our communities.
What would be, when you were researching this story, when you were sort of embedded, did you have preconceived notions? And what were confirmed, and what went by the wayside?
Yeah, so I really didn't. I really try not to, especially when I'm going to go into something where it's going to be foreign to me. I don't know what to expect. I don't know what people are going to tell me. I try to be available, to talk with people on a good level where they develop that trust, where they're willing to tell you things and talk about what's going on in their lives and the place where they work. And so I try not to come in with any preconceptions, and that has served me well, I think.
What then? What's your main takeaway?
Well, my takeaway after the fact is that the ICU of Billings Clinic is a brutal place to be, both for patients and for the staff there. And I think that the hospital would say and seeing it that, there's things that we could be doing to hopefully end this crisis that's going on and is very, very visibly going on.
I'm going to read the first part of this story, Nick, right before the break here. Nurses fill the hospital room to turn a patient from his stomach to his back. The ventilator forcing air into him is most effective when he's on his stomach. So he's in that position most hours of the day, sedated and paralyzed by drugs. Lying on his stomach all those hours has produced sores on his face, and one nurse dabs at the wounds. The dark lesions are insignificant given his current status, but she continues just the same, gently soothing, appearing to whisper to him as she works. The man has been a patient at Billings Clinic for nearly a month, most of that time in the hospital's intensive care unit. Gonna jump ahead here. The visitors generally aren't permitted in these rooms, but the man's mother comes most days to gaze through a glass window for the allowed 15 minutes. That all happened Friday. He was dead at age 24 by Sunday morning. We pick it up when we come on back.
Voices of Montana continues right after this.
One of the things that's, well, there's many things in this article that strikes me. It's available on Kaiser Health News. It's khn.org. That is our workers and our healthcare workers. We applauded them and we lauded them. And now with this recent surge, it's very difficult on them, both from a moral standpoint, but a healthcare standpoint. And just your take on as you look into their eyes and they talk to you and you try to peer into their hearts a little bit. What are they telling you?
Well, Tom, they're tired. I mean, that was pretty visible even at the start of a shift for some of these nurses, that you could just see the defeated, you know, as one of the nurses in the cardiovascular unit said, we just don't get many wins anymore. And that was really telling. You could see that they were struggling with the job that's before them to do and that they're there doing anyway. And it's just the walking into the ICU to me was, there's just row after, you know, this long row of rooms, and you look in every room, doors are all closed because it's mostly COVID patients. There's nobody there. There's no family. It's just people in these rooms by themselves with, you know, they've got ventilators, they've got intubation tubes, and it's just a really sad thing to see. And there's just so many people, some older, some younger, just really, really brutal to see what these medical professionals, really these nurses are dealing with on a daily 24/7 basis is really difficult.
Well, I hope they know that most of us and the vast majority of us are so appreciative and want to encourage them and thank them for the work they do, because even though it doesn't feel like there's wins, there are wins in this. But the ethical side of things here is also very difficult, because now hospitals are, I don't know if they have officially adopted critical, I think some of them have, I don't think it's happened to Billings Clinic yet, the state's largest hospital.
Yeah.
Crisis care. And talk about that.
Yeah, so they're close, and they've put things in place to be, you know, right on the cusp of the critical care. I think their sense was that there would be times when they would go in and out of it, depending on where cases were at and how their surges in patients were, you know, treating them. But I think that they wanted to, you know, put that out there before they actually did it, to let the community know, hey, this is coming, and there are things that we would like to see you do to help stem this tide. So I think that they were very thoughtful in their approach about, you know, not reaching out to the public after the fact, but in letting them know that this is where we're at, and this is where we can expect this to be if we don't change how our trajectory is going here.
Would you relay that example of that conflict that you wrote in your story here?
Yeah, that is already happening with there's a patient at Billings Clinic now. I believe he's still alive. I guess I'm not positive of that. The story is very inspecific about who this person is, just for, you know, privacy reasons. But I can say he's a man in his 50s who has COVID and is in bad shape. And they could, theoretically, there's this machine that's called an ECMO machine that basically is needed to keep a patient's heart and their lungs functioning. It's really for the last ditch effort for the most critical of the critical patients. The issue with this machine is that it takes a single nurse, and sometimes more than that, but at least one nurse 24 hours a day, 2 to 3 weeks. And even then, that the prognosis for this man, it would not be good, even if Billings Clinic could had the resources to use this machine and have a nurse sit with him for that long. They're just not able to do that. And so he's not going to survive. And as the woman who runs the ICU, Christy Baxter, said, the reality is I just can't staff that. And she has a moral question that they're dealing with. And she says, do you give that optimal care to one patient, or do you give great care to five? And Billings Clinic, you know, made that decision of like, it's better for us to care for these five people than, you know, put so much of our resources on one person. And, you know, that's a really awful decision to put anyone in. But, you know, these medical people that are there for the right reasons, I mean, they get into this profession to help people, and they're told, you know, there's something I could do for this person, but this is out of my hands, and we're going to have to let this one go. That's just, I think, a lousy situation that we've put our medical workers in.
Yeah, and I think anybody who, they can put themselves in those shoes and realize how that would affect them, and then magnify that, because most people are not in those shoes. But there are certainly, though, people who have been in those shoes. I'm talking about, you know, being in critical care in the hospital. Hopefully, praise God that they're coming out of that, but it doesn't happen for a lot of people. And there's another aspect to this when you talk about ethics in medicine, the morality of it as well, that COVID-19, because of the nature of it, especially this Delta variant, you're not allowed to see your kids or your family. And that makes recovering that much harder.
Yeah. Yeah. And once you're on a ventilator, you know, they are, you know, every person that I saw on a ventilator, I guess I don't know if this is always the case, but the patients that I saw were unconscious, sedated, and they're given paralyzing drugs. So, you know, that machine can do its work. And the room's there, the doors are shut, blinds are closed. These people are alone. There's no doubt about it.
Well, and reading from your story, once again, Nick Eli is with us, a freelance reporter, former editor of the Brozman Chronicle, teaches at MSU and wrote his story. Now it's carried by a lot of papers in Montana for Kaiser Health News, and that's a national newsroom that produces this in-depth journalism and offers it for the public here. Recently, a patient's dying wish, to read here, was to have their preschool-age child come and sit with them to see them one last time. That typically wouldn't be allowed, but an exception was made with staffers at the hospital draping the child in oversized protective clothing, goggles, and an N95 mask. Afterward, the nurse and doctor sobbed with that patient. It's a real intense atmosphere there. I want to ask the question because, unfortunately, in today's world, everything somehow becomes not only political but ultra-political. We're reading reports that most of those who are in critical care right now are unvaccinated. Is that what you found as well?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, the hospital is careful, and I understand their reasoning behind it, of being able to say every one of the patients on a ventilator is unvaccinated. But they did say the vast majority of those patients are unvaccinated. And you talk about it being a political issue. And I talked to a emergency room physician there, Dr. Sarah Nyquist, who said that she had a patient that wanted to know if she was a Republican or a Democrat. And, you know, her response is, I'm your doctor. And, you know, that's, I think, a really unfortunate place where we've come, where people are questioning, you know, their doctor's politics, their, you know, whether or not they're questioning that need to be vaccinated or the effectiveness of the medicine that a doctor is saying you need. It's really difficult for those. And Dr. Nyquist was great about this. And she says it's a really scary place for people that are in that point, that for whatever reason aren't vaccinated or are questioning what's going on. She said they, you know, they come to the hospital. They're obviously sick and need of care. And they've, you know, for whatever reason, they've listened to a specific news source, or they've been reading something on a specific social media account. And so they've got this worldview that of COVID, and then they come to the hospital and they're told, you know, your worldview is not accurate. And she said, that shift is really a scary thing for people when they get to that point and they've got a doctor at the hospital that they're hoping can save them say, you know, what you have believed is not true. This is how you treat COVID. And you should have gotten the vaccine.
Well, I know that's that, what she told me. I know that that is a part of this, and I know it's some, not necessarily something you looked into. It's certainly not in the report, but that comment about this is how you treat COVID. I don't know that that's the entirety of how you treat COVID. And so I don't want to get into that now because that's not something I think that you can talk about. We have talked about it here that there are other ways that other countries have effectively, and it's not a surprise. I think the messaging regarding all of this has been really mishandled. But nonetheless, medical decisions should be based on healthcare and not on politics. I got to take a break, Nick, and so stand by. It's a moving story. It certainly is, and it's one that tells us where we're at right now. We may not like it very much. Nick Eli, a freelance reporter, former editor of the Bozeman Chronicle, as I mentioned, wrote this story for Kaiser Health News. We're looking at that today here on Voices of Montana. I got a question from Glenn. When we come on back, we'll get to that as well. It is from Montana, for Montana, as I know you are too. Voices of Montana.
There's never been a better time to get your COVID-19 vaccine in Montana. It's free, it's safe, and it works. The COVID-19 vaccine is widely available, so it's easy and convenient. Many pharmacies are taking walk-ins. Text your zip code to GetVax. That's 438-829 for vaccine locations near you. Or visit covidvaccine.mt.gov to schedule your appointment today. Montana Department of Public Health and Human Services. Message and data rates may apply.
You know, I wanted to hit some things on the podcast page. This one stands out now because we talked with Dr. David Graham a while ago. He wrote this book, COVID, From Killer to Common Cold. That podcast was August 24th. That's up on the podcast page, voicesofmontana.com. Coming up tomorrow, we'll have a chance to talk more about this as we'll float through some of these topics with open phones. Nick Eli is with us here, freelance reporter, former editor of the Bozeman Chronicle, adjunct professor at MSU regarding this story for Kaiser Health News about the conditions, the current conditions, the inside look at our state's largest hospital, which is Billings Clinic. I know we got a quick comment here from Glenn listening in Great Falls on KQDI. Glenn, thanks for joining us here on Voices of Montana.
Oh, you're welcome. See, I was just listening and I kind of got to take a little exception here when they say to follow the science. The person that's in the hospital probably was home most of the time. They were home with their family, their kids, their wife, or with their, you know, wife. They were already exposed to COVID. Now, he's up in the hospital. He's critical condition. Can't have any visitors. My question is why? Because if the family's been vaccinated, or if the family's already had COVID and recovered, why can't they visit? Glenn, what's the science there?
It's a fair question, nope. and I'm running out of time is my problem here. Nick, I know that you're not a doctor, and you probably don't have an correct answer for that question, but you've seen that. You reported on that.
Yeah, so well, good question, Glenn. I think that what they're doing, and again, I don't know this. It's not something that I went into with the medical professionals there, but my sense is that when they have somebody that is in the hospital that has COVID actively infected, that they're cautious about having people that may come through and whether they've been vaccinated or they've had it before, those breakthrough cases that are possible, I think that they're overly cautious. And I think they would feel rightfully so in doing that. And that's, I think, the reasoning behind it. But again, I'm certainly not the professional on that.
Nick, thank you for that. We're out of time, but how long is it going to take you to shake off this story?
You know, it's going to be a little while, Tom. Yeah. Pretty brutal, I must say. But I hope it's reached people and given them a look at what's going on here in our communities, and, you know, that maybe make some changes for people.
Yeah. Thank you for doing it, Nick. We'll catch up with you again, okay?
Okay. Thanks, Tom.
All right. And just let's keep cheering, okay, for our providers and our frontline workers. Thank you all. We'll see you tomorrow.